Okay, so we said that we are at the Savannah Book Festival. We're broadcasting live from GPB Savannah, and we're in town for the festival. Savannah Now is going to be interviewing me on Facebook Live this afternoon if you'd like to see me squirm as the internet subject, the interview subject. But for now, I'm going to be the one asking the questions, and I'm thrilled to be speaking with Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. His debut book, Friday Black, is a New York Times bestseller. Nana, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks for being here on this early. It's Friday, actually.
Yeah.
I don't own the book that day,
but, you know.
You don't have the patent on it yet. Well, Friday Black is, of course, a twist on Black Friday, the ravenous competition to grab doorbuster deals. Now, you, reading this, there are a few stories about retail. You clearly worked in retail.
Yeah, I spent some time there, I guess, now fortunately, but, you know, back then I really felt unfortunately. But, yeah, I have spent some time working in retail.
Did you ever have to work on Black Friday?
I worked several Black Fridays, yes.
Okay. So what did you see there? Because there is a story here about, it's called Friday Black, and people are like zombies, you know, killing each other in order for deals, to get deals.
Yeah, you know, I've seen someone really step on someone else, like they're like, not like that on their face, but like on their leg or like to get to like jeans. In the first store I ever worked at, I was 16 at the time. And, you know, and I've also had done the thing where you come in the, I felt it got earlier and earlier, you know, eventually I was coming into the mall at like 10:30 and staying there till 9 p.m. or something the next day, just to, you know, watch people act crazy because of, I don't know, jackets. Mostly jackets, actually. I sold a lot of North Faces. I was like the North Face whisperer.
Oh, that's interesting because there's a character in the book. He's the Ice King.
Yeah.
And he sells pole face jackets.
Yeah.
Really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that spiel. You know that how you size a customer up when they come in and figure out what they're going to spend.
Yeah, you know, there is a little bit of art to it. It kind of is making people feel like good about themselves, directing them to like what they were going to do anyways, sort of, I don't know, making them feel like they need this thing, but also just pushing them where they were trying to go anyways, I think.
Well, that's one of the amazing things that runs through this book. It's not just the crazy customers in retail. It is how people sell themselves to the world on some level. In this story called The Finkelstein Five, you use a blackness scale, 1 to 10, that the characters, they use to project themselves. How did you come up with that?
I think that, you know, a lot of us code switch depending on, like, the space we're in. And I think the difference for, like, Black people is, like, your safety or your ability to succeed in different spaces is sort of very much determined by your ability to do so. And so I thought, how can I represent that feeling of changing and presenting myself to fit a space, like sort of this thing I know, like sort of mentally make that like a actual physical reality of a story.
So your character wakes up in the morning and he gets on the phone and he adjusts his blackness scale. Mm-hmm,
yeah, you know, because he knows it's like a job, all of a sudden he's like, hi there, how are you doing today? You know, because, and again, I think a lot of people know that that's just a part of trying to get somewhere.
It reminded me of that movie. Did you see Sorry to Bother You?
Yeah.
Boots Riley's movie. So he's a young salesman, and an older salesman tells him, like, you got to put on your white voice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, like, you know, me and my friends, I sometimes, like, I could tell, like, he's who he's talking to when we used to live together in school just by the kind of voice. You know, it's, again, like, it's not a thing we ever, like, spoke about prior, but it's just, like, a part of life, actually.
So how do you do that? Are you adjusting? You're code switching? And
I'm sure. Yeah, I do it all. I think, you know, part of what, to me, success is to not have to do it, actually.
Hmm.
But, in life, for sure, absolutely. You know, to get a job, yes, completely.
So there's more on this story, The Finkelstein Five. It's said in the aftermath of 5 young kids brutally murdered in South Carolina. Why were they killed?
They were killed for nothing, really. But
what does the defendant say?
You know, they kind of are presented as because they were threatening. They were gonna be violent towards this sort of George Zimmerman stand-in character, which is often like the case, you know, kind of just by being Black and being in the world, you're sort of there's expectations of violence.
Mm-hmm. You know? They felt threatening.
Yeah.
But you take this to the surreal level. They're decapitated by chainsaw.
Yeah.
So we as readers know that we're not reading the news necessarily. Where are you bringing us there, Nana?
Yeah, I think the chainsaw, it makes it a little bit harder to like look away from it. And then also for me, it kind of asks the question, how bad does this have to be for you to care about this? Because we have this sort of, like, I don't know, horrified feeling because of how it's happening. But I think we should be horrified now because black people are often killed and with impunity, and the murderers are let off with impunity. And I think because it's a gun, you know, it's like, okay, but for me, if you are killed with a chainsaw or a gun, you're dead either way. And so I'm trying to pushing on that sort of that thing I sense that is like, you know, these people are killed and it doesn't really matter. And I want to try to make it impossible to feel that way.
Right. So they're killed because this guy felt threatened.
Right.
And so this is a reference to these stand your ground laws, as you mentioned, George Zimmerman's defense for killing Trayvon Martin. And this comes up again in Zimmerland, which is a kind of a theme or adventure park where guests get to simulate murdering a black teen to defend their white suburban neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now, you were in college, back in college when that happened?
I was in college in Trayvon Martin was murdered, yeah.
So were the seeds of the story there for you then?
You know, I hadn't really come into myself as a writer fully yet or even at all. But what happened was me and my friends, we did actually, like, in response, anonymously create these, like, pamphlets. And we printed off, like, 500 copies and threw them around the campus. And, you know, I went to bed feeling really good about myself. Like, you know, we finally ended racism, you know?
Did anyone read them?
No one read it. I woke up hoping to see some big change. Nothing had happened at all. And I didn't like that feeling. But what I did know is that, like, you know, when I did end up writing the Finkelstein Five, I had that same feeling that I want someone to read this, even if my name isn't on it, you know?
Well, I wondered if, you know, now you're writing fiction, and this is a New York Times bestseller, so a lot more effective than pamphlets.
And I learned something about that. It's important, like engagement, and I like fiction that is entertaining. You know, I don't think you have to be entertaining or educational, you know, or entertaining or culturally pertinent. You know, I think actually you have to be both, and so I try to be both.
Well, there's a lot of satire here. There's a kind of dystopian fiction, futuristic stories. So I want to get to them, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. Coming up, we're going to hear more from him, learn about what inspires him and some of the people who have inspired him through the years. This is On Second Thought. We're broadcasting today from Savannah at our GPB bureau there, and we'll be talking more about guests at the Savannah Book Festival. Stay with us. I know that it's good. Won't you sit it on my taste buds? I get way too busy. Won't you let me do the extras? Pull up on your block and break it down. We playing Tetris. AM to the PM, PM to the AM phone. Eat up your per diem. You just got to hate them phone. If I quit your BM, I still rock Mercedes phone. If I quit this season, I still be the greatest funk. My left stroke just went viral. Virginia Prescott on Second Thought is broadcasting from GBB in Savannah today. We're going to be at the Savannah Book Festival all weekend with authors like my guest, Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. His short story collection, Friday Black, is a New York Times bestseller, getting a lot of attention. And he's going to be live at the book festival tomorrow morning at 10. So let's get to this. You know, these stories have been called Black Mirror meets Black Lives Matter. So a little twisted, a little futuristic, a little turned up. What does not writing straight fiction allow you to do?
I think it gives me it's like a freedom, you know? If I need something to exist in a world and it doesn't exist, I create it. And that's, you know, I guess that's just like a freedom for me. But also it's fun. I like the idea of getting someone to clearly visualize something that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. You know, that process is like fun for me. And
yeah,
that's important.
And they shift from, you know, there's different worlds in each of these stories. How detailed do you go into your kind of world building?
It's more detailed in my head than it usually ever gets in the story.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think of a lot of, especially with these short stories, you're getting sort of the tip of the iceberg. But I like to really imagine a world that this kind of situation might occur. And we're seeing like a snapshot in a day in the life of that world. But for me, usually I have like a great sense of like a lot of that world, actually.
So you're imagining like what the person eats for breakfast and how they get to work.
I'm imagining like what even a job is in like a story like The Era. Like what do his parents do? Like what makes sense in like this world? What jobs don't exist anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. The Era is set in the future. It feels very futuristic. And it's a story about perpetual war, really, that we're engaged in battle all the time. And thinking of, you know, Dr. King's arc of history, arc of the moral universe, do you see the future as being a more bigoted, more violent place?
You know, I think that it can be, yes. I think, like, you know, the arc of, you know, history, like, it bending towards, like, I don't know, justice or what is right. I think it does if you, like, stomp on it really hard. You know, I think you have to, like, really push it. And I think it's really easy to get complacent, and it's really easy to sort of accept a lot of brutality in the, that comes to us in the form of comfort. But it's often our comfort is someone else's sort of viciousness. And I think, like, being, like, keeping your eye on that is important.
Well, the stories are scary in many ways and vicious, but darkly humorous. How do you get a feel for how that works, how far to go in the humor? Do you ask people to read it? Do you just envision it?
I mean, I guess, like, you know, I kind of, like, go by what makes me laugh, you know? I think, again, like, I think something about the satire, sometimes the absurdity, it's kind of my way of saying to the reader, like, you know, this is an experiment we're doing with our brains right now, imagining this space. And luckily, we can imagine it. But for someone else, this is real. But I think when we peel back some of the sort of, I don't know, illusions of whatever we are, of sometimes just euphemism, the things we allow are absurd. And there's something funny about that. And not always ha-ha funny. Sometimes the punchline is actually it's not a joke at all. But I think there is something funny about a lot of things we accept. And I like to just, you know, sometimes play with that.
You dedicated this book to your mom. You said, for mom who said, how can you be bored? How did that encourage you?
Well, you know, my mom, again, African woman, she's Ghanaian. And I think if people who have parents who are Ghanaian, they are very into, you know, they hate their children being idle more than anything else. And my mom said that before I was ever interested in writing. You know, she just saw me sitting there once, and she doesn't like being bored. But it did help me, like, later on, though. I can always be working on something, so... thanks to her.
Thanks, Mom. So now you're teaching at Syracuse. You're going to be visiting with Savannah High School and college students today.
Yeah.
How do you talk to them about this world that you're painting?
You know, I emphasize that, like, you know, it's writing is a fun thing, and also, but it's also a purposeful thing. You know, there's also something important that you can do with your words. And also that, you know, your perspective, you specifically, whoever I'm talking to, you're getting that person on the page is what you're trying to do. And so I think, like, you know, everyone maybe potentially has something meaningful to write.
And a lot more powerful than pamphlets.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm out of the pamphlet game. Maybe someone else, that's their thing. But, yeah, you know, tell your story, and maybe something magic can happen.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Author Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. He's going to be at the Savannah Book Festival again tomorrow morning at 10. You can go to our website, gbbnews.org, for details on the events, or you can look at the Savannah Book Festival website. All of the events are free, and it is just an amazing program.